Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
In our politics, I'm going to start out talking about voter integrity. We're going to talk about some other things. We're going to talk about some of the close races that are coming up here in just a very, very short period of time. I'm going to talk about where those races are right now. Jimmy, why don't you start out with that?
Yeah, so let's talk about the Senate, control of the Senate. It looks fairly clear that the Republicans, conservatives, will take control of the House. And those numbers are shifting anywhere between like 15 seats to up to over 50. Mm-hmm. My guess is that there's going to be over 50 seat swap or advantage for the Republicans in the House after this election, or at least a 50 seat gain. And I think that in the Senate, I'm looking at about a three-seat advantage for the Republicans. And
Jimmy,
here,
what
like
are the seats you're looking at?
So yeah, some of these key races right now. There's a couple of Republicans that have backed out from Ohio and Pennsylvania in particular, Toomey and Portman, and of course in the Pennsylvania race, you've got Oz Fetterman.
Yeah.
In Ohio, you've got J.D. Vance and Tim Ryan. So the numbers, at least the polling, is tipping towards Oz and towards J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance may have a couple of point advantage in general polling. Mehmoot Oz, about equal to Fetterman. And those are both Republican seats. But the Democratic seats that are at risk are some really important. Arizona, Blake Masters and Mark Kelly. And, of course, the Laxalt, Cortez Masteo in Nevada.
Yeah.
And then Walker Warnock in Georgia. And then kind of the outlier Democratic seat that's at risk, Smiley versus Murray in one of the top three senior Democrats in the Senate in state of Washington.
Yeah. Patty Murray is almost a, for lack of better terms, foundation in the state of Washington. She's been around for so long. I like the other gal a lot. I like her background, but I don't think she's going to beat Murray in this state.
It's funny because the polling is getting within 2 or 3 points, which is quite interesting. You wouldn't expect even that close of a race.
Yeah, we'll see.
What we're seeing is a swing in polling, in generic ballot polling, but in specifically in each one of these states, more towards Republican in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's going to happen. Actually, ballots are out in many states right now, and certainly the people that have asked for provisional ballots or mail-in ballots, they've already gone out.
Yeah.
But the interesting part about this is, I go back to the polling methodologies here. There was a kind of a very strong Republican general position a few months ago, and then of course with the Roe v. Wade decision, the Democrats and the pollsters all showed this push towards Democrats, because they were going to use the abortion issue as a topic. And of course, the other issue that they're using, that Democrats are using, is the January 6th trials and this entire threat to democracy, right? Quote, the threat to democracy.
Right.
It's very interesting to listen to the media try to hype both of those particular issues right now, mainstream media sources, in spite of that, and actually going all in and absolutely trashing Republican candidates over these issues, you're still seeing a move to the right. Now, that's a very interesting position, considering the vast majority of the media is definitely against Republican candidates. And there's no question about it from when we're talking about mainstream media.
I agree 100%. Jimmy, let's get some comments also on voter integrity, can we? That's what we were going to start out with. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, so the real problem with these races is, you know, one is I think the polling's skewed, and I don't think it's capturing a lot of frustration and typical voter, people that don't typically vote. And when you look in Georgia with the initial returns right now, you're seeing massive numbers of votes, early voting that's coming in. And actually, the Republicans are way ahead. This is very scary to the Democrats right now. So very interesting point. But here's some things that have popped up in just the last few days on election integrity that make you wonder how this is all going to turn. So reporting says, according to an audit in Torrance County, New Mexico, a relatively small county, and I don't remember what the total number of voters were in the area, but it's a relatively small county. Mm-hmm. They did a hand count based on an injunction or request by one of the candidates in one of the races. I believe it was an independent candidate. And they came back with a 25% differential between the hand count and the machine count.
Yeah.
The machine count gave Democrats, according to this reporting and according to what's going on in that county as of today, the machine count gave Democrats a significant advantage. But the hand count came back with a 25% differential that actually gave the Republicans an advantage. So that's an interesting point. And then what's happening in Fulton County with election integrity, even Governor Brian Kemp and Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, are coming out and saying that the documentation for ballots in that county over this last primary election is basically untenable, that it's so confusing, it's so poorly done, and it's inaccurate. And it looks like some of the batch reporting, when you're going back to 2020 to the election, has a significant number of unregistered or unqualified ballots. So these two types of things make people very nervous about what's going to happen. And if you have
how in God's name is this voter integrity going to be sorted out? Nobody's going to be happy any way that it goes. How would you predict it's going to come out?
So you're exactly right. I think especially with these close races, it doesn't matter who wins or loses. The one side or the other is going to claim fraud. Right. So there has to be a very significant victory. And I'm predicting that there will be challenges in some of these states, especially in places like Pennsylvania, where they're actually ignoring the Supreme Court order not to count ballots without dates on them for mail-in ballots. Some of the counties have said we're going to do that. So your question, how do we get this back in some sort of sense of order? There has to be absolute transparency.
Right.
There has to be voter identification. There has to be clean voter rolls, and there has to be incredible observation and significant audits like what we see here in Torrance County. There's another one in Michigan during the 2020 election that had a significant change as well. I'm trying to remember the name of the Atrium County, I believe it was. And you've got to hold the election officials there accountable. And there are numerous groups that are actually going out and doing this type of thing right now that should make this harder to corrupt. But at the same time, we know that there was a tremendous effort and a tremendous amount of expense in order for people to flip votes and to gather mail-in ballots and actually harvesting what they call it when they go out and get other people's ballots and drop them off.
Jimmy, we only got a minute left here. We're going to have to take a break here very quickly. Let me round this up by saying you have painted a picture that I think is very, very accurate. I think you've also painted a picture that is showing the difficulty in what's going on right now in terms of voter integrity. I guess the only thing at this point that I could say, it's a major problem right now, and it's something that has to be resolved. And I'm not so sure that I just pray to God that it gets resolved by the big election, which is coming up in 2024, because I certainly don't want to see what's happened, certainly in the past in this particular case. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a real quick commercial break. Stick around. Like some comments on this one. We'll be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
We're going to go from election integrity to the economy. Right now, the complaint of the day right in my neighborhood happens to be what's happening with everybody's 401ks. The markets are absolutely getting hammered right now. As of this particular recording, which is Friday morning, the markets are really kind of treading water, up a point, down a point being defined as a percentage. Jimmy, what are the main things about the economy right now that concern you?
Well, the first one, and first and foremost, of course, is inflation.
You bet.
We've talked about it a lot. We are not going to see a drop in inflation anytime soon. This was allowed to go because of mass money printing and pumping tremendous amount of, you know, basically unbacked dollars into the economy, and we haven't seen the end of that. There's still money that has not been used from the federal spending that was approved under this current administration.
Yeah.
So that's going to continue. But the second piece of it, beyond the inflation, which they're actually interrelated, is the drive to stop fossil fuels and this administration, this regime's efforts to stop fossil fuel use. The lack of, you know, continuing the Keystone Pipeline from Canada, the lack of permits for, you know, new oil and gas fields, the regulatory environment that makes it very restrictive, and then most importantly, the influence through ESG, environmental social governance, investing through major investors to not put money towards fossil fuel industry.
Yeah.
At the same time, demanding that they reduce prices or they continue to produce fuel. It doesn't make any sense unless you're pushing a political agenda. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing right now. And it's going to impact the world. It's going to impact the American consumer. And it probably, in my view, is a political disaster for the current administration.
Well, I think it's a political disaster primarily because the closer winter gets, the more people realize exactly what's going to happen to the price of their heating bills. It's going to be astronomical. And we could have actual major emergencies in the European countries when the weather gets cold, Jim.
Well, not only in the European countries, but yeah, you know, they're, of course, with the sanctions on Russia over the Ukraine war, a lot of these issues are going to create big problems for not only pricing, but actual availability of natural gas and, of course, other, you know, fuels and energy supplies in Europe. But even here in the United States, we're going to see shortages. And, of course, the New England area has just announced that there's liable to be shutoffs during the wintertime.
Yeah.
That's going to have a big impact on, you know, up in the Northeast. In these cold, expected to be a cold winter. And of course, across the country, we're seeing huge price increases because people had to lock in oil and gas for their, you know, planning for the winter to have availability. And they had to pay at really high prices in July and August in order to have valuable, you know, to have inventory for this coming winter, and people are going to pay that price, and it's going to really hurt them.
Well, I got to tell you, the thing that I really wonder about is taking over 1 million barrels out of the strategic oil reserves, as Biden did last week. I really have to wonder if that isn't just a stopgap, and I wonder if that isn't probably not the smartest way to handle this situation. What do you think?
Oh, it's completely political.
Yeah, so of course it is.
It's 1 million barrels a day, 180 million barrels that he announced last March.
Right.
In order to get him through October, thinking that the numbers would drop, you know, that the prices would go down.
Yeah.
Though they set policy in motion that would continue to cause prices to go up. So that's absolutely insidious, if not just stupid on their part, but I think it's more insidious. And then to announce that he's going to pump another 15 million to 18 million to compensate for the OPEC drop of 2 million a day.
Yeah.
that is clearly directed to get him through the November 8th election.
Yeah.
To keep the prices down from there. The problem is prices are still up 50% or more than they were a year ago and way more than he was when he took office.
Yeah.
So, and of course, inflation is just, you know, burning a hole in people's pockets right now, especially the people on the margins, the ones that got to pay for gas to drive to work, the ones that are paying for, you know, just food, because food prices are just skyrocketing, all related to the production, the fertilizers, the fuel to transport, and then the costs across the board of these policies that this administration put in place.
Well, you've got an inflation rate at the grocery store of about 40%, which is really, really high.
It's hard to believe. And when you look at numbers, if you use the same numbers that we used in 1980 to judge inflation under the Carter and the Reagan years, if you use those same numbers today, the numbers would be not just 40-year highs. They'd be way higher.
Yeah.
60, 70-year highs. They're much, maybe record highs. But, of course, we changed the way that we do, we adjust these consumer prices and the producer price indexes.
Yeah.
So now we're not actually capturing the amount of pain that, you know, relative to our historical situations. And unfortunately, I think unfortunately for the Democrats, people are going to say, you know what, I just can't take this anymore.
No. If anything is going to kill the Biden campaign in 24, it's going to be inflation. If the inflation doesn't really, really drop down a lot lower than it is right now. I have an economist friend who says he feels because of the way that inflation is calculated, it really isn't that bad right now. But I got to tell you, I completely disagree with him because I'm the guy who does the grocery shopping. I'm the guy who puts gas in my car. I'm the guy who spends the money, and I know that it's going absolutely astronomically high. I got a minute left, Jimmy.
Right. So real wages are, you know, going at about 6%.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 5.5%, 5.3%.
Yeah.
Inflation's about 8.2%. So that's a gap of 3%. But here's the problem. When they talk about wage increases, how many people actually get wage increases every month in order to keep up with these CPI numbers? Nobody does. They get it annually. So you have not seen the actual wage increases.
Yeah.
That are needed for people to actually keep up. So it's even a double negative impact. And of course, the statistics out there that the government is putting out really don't capture the pain. And I don't care who they are. If you think right now that this is not impacting average people, take a look at the polling.
Exactly. It's hurting the Americans really, really badly. Highest thing that I've seen. Most important thing that I've seen in a long time. You guys, time for top of the hour news break.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Time for the second half of KER Politics. Going to talk about a very well-known individual in the political arena, and that is Steve Bannon. I just finished reading Jared Kushner's book, and he had some interesting things in that book to say about Steve Bannon, which we'll touch on just briefly in this particular segment. We're going to also, obviously, in this segment, we're actually going to go on and talk a little bit about some of the insipid reasons that we are hearing regarding the abortion question. Jimmy, why don't you start out with Steve Bannon?
Yeah, so this morning, the federal court that was sentencing, the judge that was sentencing Steve Bannon for contempt of the January 6th committee, the fraudulent January 6th committee, might I add, they actually gave him 4 months in prison with a $6,500 fine. This is very different than the the actual 6 months that the DOJ had recommended in a $200,000 fine.
Right.
So, but the judge also gave, let him stay out of jail pending appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to understand with Steve Bannon's actual request here and his appeal is that he was not allowed to use the justification in his trial that his lawyers had recommended against him speaking to the committee because of the actual executive privilege requirements for an administration official. So he was listening to his lawyer's advice. The J6 committee pushed forward to the DOJ to push this event, to push the push the trial for contempt. The judge convicted of contempt, but then let him out pending appeal. And my guess is that he has a pretty sound argument for the appeal because that didn't even let that into the court. And that may be a way that the judge allowed this to go forward and let him out without actually looking like he was, giving him a break.
Yeah.
So it's funny because Steve Bannon has been he was very appreciative today in court. He said he respects the rule of law. He respects the judge, no animosity about it. And he's moving forward. Of course, he's going to continue to spit fire against globalization and the Chinese influence that is directing our politics right now.
Yeah, you bet he is.
But I think that there's a very interesting sidebar to this entire event, and that's that you've got these competing interests of the January 6th committee attempting to create this kind of vision that the United States democracy is under threat for an insurrection. And then you've got Steve Bannon that's saying, look, people are standing up and saying, we're tired of what you're doing in Washington, and we need an insurrection. And not an insurrection as in a violent insurrection, but actually to change the direction of government. So you've got these conflicting ideas right now that are really, really tense inside Washington and, of course, reflected around the country right now.
Well, the comment that I would make, unfortunately, is the way the press is, and this is a natural thing with Mr. Bannon, the way the press is depicting Mr. Bannon right now, he has been first and foremost for the last, certainly for this week, one of the biggest players in the area of getting his hand slapped as opposed to any other Republican. And my comment about that is I think that regardless of who is right and who is wrong, I think that the presence of Bannon at this moment in time is making the Republicans look bad. What do you think about that?
I actually pretty strongly disagree with that.
Okay, tell me why.
And this is, I think it's so it looks bad to people that follow left-wing journalists.
Yeah.
Right? Because they are appealing to a particular ideology.
Yeah.
And the general argument is somehow here's this guy that's just crazy and he looks a little bit wild and he speaks definitely with some strong opinions and very much against communist China and kind of a globalization of the U.S. So for the people that are globalists, the people that are actually in the mainstream media that are funded by globalists, he's a danger.
Yeah.
For people that want to make a fortune off the backs of American citizens, he's a danger because he's really pushing a populist agenda. So you're seeing that on one side. But what you're seeing on the other side is people beginning to wake up to say, what the heck is going on with the corruption in Washington? We're actually seeing behind the curtain and we realize how awful this really is. And Steve Bannon is one of those leaders that's doing that.
Yeah.
And I know off mic we were talking a little bit about Jared Kushner and his impression of Steve Bannon.
Right. Kushner does not like Bannon.
Right. And the funny thing is, Bannon does not like Jared Kushner.
Right.
And of course, Peter Navarro thinks that in his book, he says the reason why the Trump administration failed was because of recommendations and the influence of Jared Kushner. So there's two competing ideologies out there.
Well, I guess I would have to just counter that by asking the following question. Look what he accomplished in the Middle East, Jim.
Well, he did well, and there are things that he did well. But there are other things that he and some of the Rhino Republicans. I mean, Jared Kushner was a liberal, New York Democrat.
Right.
I mean, he just was. So he was advising Trump based on that ideology background. Okay. But what he also is, he's also a moneymaker. And, of course, corporate interests are very important.
Yeah.
So he was advising against policies specifically with reductions on trade with China that really negatively impacted the United States. And he and just a couple of other key players, Steve Mnuchin in particular, were actually undermining those types of more aggressive policies that would be more important for America. And that's the conflict right here. Globalist ideologies, leftist ideologies versus, people that are trying to, in their minds, save the world. And I tend to agree more with we need to be a little bit stronger on, protecting American interests rather than foreign interests and financial interests of big corporations.
Well, I agree 100%. And I think that's the main problem that we have right now in terms of the what's going on in the country philosophically is you and I feel very strongly, as does, quite frankly, Bannon, that we're giving away the farm with our policy, giving away the farm to China and other countries, et cetera, et cetera. But the real power in the country right now, unfortunately, happens to be the liberal press, and the liberal press is just going in exactly the opposite direction, Jimmy.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting, I think, something that we ought to think about, because the liberal press, which is controlled by corporate interests, which we've discussed numerous times on the show.
Sure we
have. They have an agenda, but they are also being, in spite of all the influences, we talked about it earlier in these, with these Senate races, all the influence, people are not listening to them as much as they were in the past because they don't trust them. And when you look at polling, the biggest threat to democracy is not Trump supporters. According to polling, it's not Trump supporters. It's not, Republican white supremacists or right wing conservatives. It's actually the mainstream media. According to polling, people don't trust them. So as you don't trust them, you're seeing advances by conservative causes that are against big tech and big media controlling the future of America. And that's beginning. That's exactly what Steve Bannon is talking
exactly
about.
Now we're down to 30 seconds, Jim.
Yeah. And so I think that this, you're going to see what happens in this election coming up right now and what the pushback is in America.
Well, I think you're right. It's going to be interesting to see if the pushback is strong enough. We're going to get a really good indication here in about a week, a little over a week, and we're certainly going to get a definitive indication of that come 2024. You guys stick around. We'll be right back. Up KER Politics. We're going to get back to the COVID issue. We're going to talk about Pfizer. Jimmy has been following Pfizer for an awfully long time, well over 20 years. Jimmy, what have you come up with?
Well, I think it's important to know what's happening right now in the European Union. Pfizer has developed this, this quote vaccine, and we're getting a lot of information that they're unseen, unreported risks with the vaccines. But more importantly, they're still pushing agendas, and a lot of countries, including the United States, are still pushing the vaccinations in spite of some information that they ought to be reviewing and looking at. But here's, in particular, the European Union. They had a hearing this last week. They invited the CEO, Albert Bourla of Pfizer, to actually testify. He didn't show up to the European Union inquest. He did send a representative.
Where did that take place? Do you remember?
Well, in Brussels, Brussels of the EU. So But after the hearing was basically on why they're doing the largest contract, 36 billion euros in European history with Pfizer, but they're not actually giving all information on the vaccine.
Yeah.
And apparently over in the contract, over 100 pages were blacked out. Members of the European Parliament had a press conference and complained about this, that they actually can't make a decision or determination without actually having the facts behind it.
How can you have a contract with 100 redacted pages in it? You can't.
Well, and their argument, and they're working with health departments, they're not working with elected officials, they're working with health agencies, the EU health agencies. Their argument, Pfizer's argument, is that there are commercial secrets involved. But yeah, it's hard for me to believe that there's over 100 pages blacked out in this contract.
Yeah.
But here's the big kicker. Under questioning, the Pfizer representative, when asked about their testing for transmission after the vaccines, the Pfizer representative said, we never tested for that.
Yeah.
So if they never tested for whether or not the vaccine protects from transmission and they don't have that data, then why the heck are they going to spend 36 billion euros on a program to expand vaccinations when in fact we know there are complications that are showing up with myocarditis, pericarditis, with pregnant women, and of course numerous other potential problems that haven't been fully researched.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, the questions are valid, they're good, and the Europeans actually have apparently pushed a criminal investigation, and they're looking into the details of not only the contract, but also maybe some fraudulent information that was not presented from the initial studies to justify and approve the emergency use authorization in Europe.
Well, what now, I find interesting is all of this seems to be occurring when proof of vaccination is going to be required shortly here by students returning to school, right?
That's right. The CDC had just put a recommendation, a 15-0 vote on their panel, their board, for vaccine recommendations that, in fact, children in the United States should be vaccinated from COVID-19. And, of course, this is in spite of mounds of literature and data that shows that children are not at risk, they have a low probability of spread, and that, in fact, they have higher probability of negative responses than this vaccine will provide.
Right.
And so what is very important when we started this segment is to consider that the company with the largest fine in U.S. history was $2.3 billion in a plea deal for mispromoting medicines, Bextra and Celebrex, for paying kickbacks to doctors. And who did that? Pfizer.
When did that happen, Jimmy?
That happened in the 2000s, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But there's numerous cases since then where, the case happened in the early 2000s, but they were fined, and the Justice Department released a settlement statement on September 2nd, 2009.
Yeah.
$2.3 billion for fraudulent marketing. And there are numerous other cases. 1990s, there were over 100 deaths for a hazardous drug. They paid a $10.75 million settlement in defective heart valves. There's a long list of Pfizer using, they used children in Nigeria to test a drug, paid $75 million to settle with the Nigerian court for an experimental antibiotic after the damage that they did there. So,
what was the damage there, Jimmy?
So basically they were testing on children without notification.
Oh, okay.
So they were using children as guinea pigs.
Wow.
Without consent, without parental consent, and without any idea of, with any notifications of what the risk factors would be.
Yeah.
So
that just almost sounds ludicrous, Jimmy.
No, but these are facts. These are things that have happened that this company's been involved with. So somehow we're now supposed to trust that they were in the best interest of the world by going ahead and creating this drug, and then basically using every element of their propaganda. And oh, by the way, people that are on like the approval board for this student recommendation for students to have the COVID vaccines, people like Scott Gottlieb, former FDA director, who's now on the Pfizer board, you got to be kidding me. You know, there's the system and these major corporations that are involved in pharmaceuticals have so much influence, and it's really hard to trust what's happening, especially when they try to hide information and background on what the potential negative effects were here.
Yeah. I don't know. This whole thing is getting to be absolutely ridiculous. You know, you don't hear about this anyplace else aside from on the KER Politics report. People just don't talk about it. I don't understand what's going on, Jim.
Well, I mean, look, if it changes, if it's against the Democratic Party's narrative, remember, Donald Trump, when he was a president, went on this huge effort to try to create these vaccines very rapidly, right? You know, this Operation Warp Speed.
Right.
Then I think he was... And oh, by the way, I was talking about Mike Pence's failures yesterday in our daily editorial. Mark Pence was responsible for the task force. He was the guy in charge of this, and he failed miserably to understand what was going on behind the scenes.
You bet he did.
So why is this all happening? Corruption. Donald Trump, when he was president, said, hey, no, I don't expect people, I'm not going to mandate the vaccines. When Joe Biden took over, the fear was used for intimidation, political ends, forcing vaccines, getting people fired. Any government official, any military official would lose their job if they did not get the vaccinations. And of course, that's financially beneficial to the major pharmaceutical companies.
You bet.
And then they absolutely recommended and were forcing major corporations with over 100 employees to force vaccinations, or people were getting fired. So, you know, we're talking a major, major impact to society with an unproven, without any long-term understanding of the impact of these entire vaccinations. But the pharmaceutical companies that created them, like Pfizer, are making billions off of it.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. How does Moderna fit into all of this?
So Moderna's the same, you know, they're in the same boat. They actually came out, though. I think the CEO of Moderna came out last week and said, hey, look, we shouldn't be giving children the vaccines. They don't need them, which I thought was bold. But at the same time, that doesn't go with the narrative.
45 seconds, Jim.
Yeah. So, it's hard. Moderna. But again, you've got a new technology, this mRNA technology. We don't know the long term impacts of it. I think it could be potentially very dangerous. We don't know. We should know before we start forcing the entire world into some sort of experimental process that, that tests these vaccines on human guinea pigs.
You know, the only comment I can make for our listeners is you got to listen to what Jimmy says. You know, my philosophy in terms of chatting with the public, my philosophy is you have to listen to every single side of every story to protect yourself. That's what this program attempts to do. Thank you, Jim.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.